Hello, good afternoon. Here at Phil Matu, speaking from Pearl District in Portland, central Portland. I'm sitting here with Amber Case, who's a cyber anthropologist and co-founder of the location service GeoLoki. And first, hello, Amber. And I would like to know what's that? What's a cyber anthropologist and what does a cyber anthropologist do? Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing well, thanks. Cyborg anthropologist was a term that was created somewhat recently in the 90s to talk about the interface between technology and humans, not just computer technology, but also physical tools and how technology changes humanity and how people work with each other. And it kind of started out of these MACI meetings in the 1950s in America. There were cyberneticists, scientists, and anthropologists, and they came together maybe about 15 or 20 of them at a time every year, and they had these things called the MACI meetings where it said that there are these giant computers and that one day they're going to be very small and they're going to fit on everyone's desks, and at that point, society and how people think and live and connect with each other will be completely altered. And so we need to understand the impact of this technology that's moving faster than any other revolution that we've ever seen, and what that could have an effect on going forward. And so no one really paid too much attention to it because machines were still so big. Mm. No one thought that everyone would have a machine in their pockets. Mm. So that was the beginning. And now as everyone is kind of having a second self online and having to go through kind of a second adolescence creating their online persona and interacting with people when they're not even there and interacting with people's external selves from far away, there are a number of questions that kind of come to pass. And cyborg anthropology is a kind of an anthropological framework for understanding what is our world shaping up into being.
Interesting. I think your profile is very interesting because on the one hand, you talk about cyber anthropology and you explain it very well now from an intellectual, cultural point of view, anthropological point of view, but at the same time, you are the co-founder of GeoLoki, which is it's a startup here in the district of Pearl in Portland, Oregon. How do you mix those profiles? How do you put them together?
So that's a great question. GeoLoki was founded out of the idea that I could go and speak about how bad these interfaces were, that there were a bunch of people out there, and increasingly so, and they say, I'm bad at computers, I'm bad at technology. And I always tell them, you're not bad at technology. Technology is bad at humans. They're completely different systems. How you program a computer and how a computer understands how someone interacts with them is very complex. And so it requires very good design to understand what the human means so that they can harmoniously interact. And so I got into the field of user experience design to try and make buttons easier to press and interfaces easier to use. Because really, in the built environment, all you have are interfaces. You have doors that squeak, that won't close. You have bathrooms that have broken toilets. You have streets with potholes. Everything is this built environment that's designed. And if it's designed well, you have a pleasant experience. Like I just came back from Sweden. Everything is very well designed, so you have a pleasant experience the whole time. If it's not well designed, it tends to decay. You get confused when you try to use it. You have a friction-filled reality. So what I did is, starting in college, I started going back to all of the architecture theory from 1968 to 1974, where it was a kind of visionary architecture. They said, what if architecture could shift according to the use case that someone had? What if it was fluid? What if you could drive your living room into somebody else's living room to have a party? And if you had a party with 50 people, everyone could drive their living rooms together and you'd have a large enough space. Some of them were very wacky. But the main thing was that the space should be shaped by the need that people had in that space. And so, and at the same time, I looked at park research. And in the 70s, they had these little GPS communicators that you would wear around your neck. And when you got into the building, it would automatically turn on your computer. And by the time you got to your desk, their computer would be on. It would take 5 or 10 minutes to boot up your computer in that time period. So those together, first, if you look at architecture theory and you apply it to the internet, internet is architecture. Mm-hmm. People have to build it from scratch. And a lot of times the shape morphs according to the need. And so technically on Facebook, you are driving your living room into somebody else's living room to write on their wall, right? It's this like morphing space. And I think the reason that people have such an anger towards when somebody changes the outline, the page on Facebook, is that it's the equivalent of somebody coming into your house when you're not there, changing the cabinets to the other side of the room, making them smaller or larger, and putting the floor 12 inches lower, something like that, or 12 centimeters lower. And so you get angry because you live in your house. And a lot of people now are living on social interfaces like Facebook and Twitter. And the other thing is, at Park Research, none of this technology actually showed up in the real world, with the exception of some of the things that Steve Jobs took and made accessible to people. I said, what happened? Why can't we have, you know, invisible interfaces? You know, why can't we approach our house and have the lights automatically turn on, and when we leave, the lights automatically turn off? Why can't we have technology that helps us to be more human, that helps us with our lives, that recedes into the background and doesn't bother us? That instead of thinking of how to design a system, figure out how to take something annoying out of the system and make it better. So the whole point of that was I wanted to actually do what people had done at Park Research in the 70s with modern technology. And I wanted to enable more people to do it too and make their lives better. So I started GeoLoki as you know, a lot of people, they said, you talk a lot about anthropology. Do you ever apply it? And I said, yes, I now apply it through making these tool sets for people.
Definitely, the human-centered design of design centered to the needs, the real needs and the current needs requires, I guess, a lot of true design and evolving design and real-time design. And definitely, yeah, I think that we always need to put in practice what we always probably, you have probably always have studied, no? So what is your focus now with GeoLoki? Because you are being more a platform, I heard, rather than just another location-based social networking site, or?
Yes, yes. We found that there were a number of problems in the industry. If you want to add location to an application, battery life is a big issue. You can't just have constant GPS on. There are many stories in the industry. The stories are very easy to tell in location. You know, I want to make a real-life game of Pac-Man where there are geofences all over the city and you run around with phones and you can see where everyone is and you eat the dots. It seems very simple to say. I want to walk past my house and get a reminder of what I need to do. I want to be able to get a geocoded, you know, Wikipedia article when I walk around town. I mean, these things are very easy to state, but they're very hard to implement. And we wanted to just take care of that for everyone. So the, you know, geo data has to be stored differently than other data. So you can't just put it in, you know, the cloud. It has to be in its own special cloud that's specifically formatted for geo data. Battery life has to be managed. Figuring out whether a device is inside a geofence or not has to be managed. All of this stuff would actually, if you had no expertise in it when you came into it as a developer, might take 6 months to accomplish. And then you finally can get to building your application. And we saw that people were frustrated with that. And there aren't that many location-based apps out there. And there are a lot of applications. I mean, you could use a tracker on a phone to figure out if somebody was suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's disease. You could use it for all sorts of health purposes. If somebody's being flown in on an emergency on a helicopter, they should automatically be checked into the hospital and have all of their records be sent over to that hospital. I mean, there's kind of life-saving applications that need to occur, like being able to watch people, you know, securely so that you can make sure that they're not going to be in danger when they're in another country. Watching somebody come home at night, you know, walking through a college campus, making sure, you know, that person's safe. And so we said, we can either build a bunch of these little apps and do a lousy job because there's only a few of us, or we can make a platform that enables everyone to build the thing that they need for their industry. And because of that, you know, it's been a very hard thing to do. It's been hard to solve the problems. We made the real-life game of Pac-Man because we wanted to have something that made you feel like a kid again, get you outside and back in your environment. We found that a lot of apps take you away from the world. You know, augmented reality really takes away. It doesn't add to your reality and enhance it. So we have this thing called non-visual augmented reality where you get pushed data based on where you are. And it's only the data that you need at that time. And it helps you to be kind of a superhuman. So we want to enable superhuman technology. It makes you feel more powerful, allows you to see better, and allows you to be relaxed because it helps your life. And So that's what we're trying to do and enable people to do. And we thought it'd be a lot better than just making another social location-based app, because nobody needs more of those. They need technology that solves real-world problems.
Definitely. And I see also the point you've mentioned, one of the sectors you probably are aiming at commercially, but also like the developers working close or the developers working within those companies can also implement your service offering in nearer their own needs, because they know what they need. It's not only an outside developer who is developing something for that company, but it's someone who also can teach you, probably you in the future, no? So you can also keep the path of innovation.
Yeah, correct. I mean, people in their own industry know what they need, and we can't know everything about every industry. But if we give them a way to use what they know to help out, you know, whatever space they're in, then that's great. And there aren't that many people trying to, there are a few people trying to kind of offer this, but in a way it's a very nerdy thing to do, and we like doing this, but a lot of people just want to deal with making consumer-facing apps or enterprise-facing apps, and they should do the thing that they like, and we should do the thing that we like, and everyone will benefit from that. And all we want to do is do a good job.
Definitely. I mean, I'm a fan of telling stories and telling stories using the digital tools that we have now available. I do all, everything of my work, do it with smartphones. I use geolocation, but I'm just trying to imagine ways in which we will be able to use the geolocation as a narrative. Well, of course, I think it's already being used in different you know, TV shows or transmedia stories or TV transmedia TV shows that have had, like Nokia has done several things in Europe, and there are sure other stories. But for the smaller storytellers, I wonder in the future if we will also have like ways to plot those stories geographically somehow. I don't know. I'm just trying to imagine it. I haven't come to anything clear yet, but I'm just exploring that way.
One of the things that we just finished building was a visual editor where you can draw a dot on a map in a radius, and then inside it you can write a story or a clue, and someone can subscribe to that story or clue. We made a sample app called GeoLookie that you can download. It's free for iPhone and Android. And you can build, without being a developer, a little layer there and title it, you know, story. And then someone can subscribe to it, and as they walk around town, they can get a story that's unwrapped and just push to them, you know, or they can get, you know, they can do a scavenger hunt, or they can get pieces of media or content. And it's just this, you know, it's a hard thing to actually build. So there are so many, you know, artists and storytellers out there that they don't have the technical expertise or time, or there's no reason why they would build something like this from scratch. But this allows them to really, you know, put something in a place. And location-based storytelling, a lot of it has been done in Sweden. They were one of the first places to have a location-based service offering. And so when I went over to Sweden, I got to speak at Sony Ericsson and meet a lot of people who were doing location-based stories. But they made them on very old systems with, you know, millions of dollars of grant money. And now anybody can do it if they wanted to, by just opening up a map and dropping pins and putting stories there. And so we just, you know, that's kind of something we wanted to enable people to do, just because we, you know, kind of part of it's philanthropic. Like, we want to show interesting things you can do with location that don't involve advertising. And then, you know, we make our money off of the, you know, industries using it for, you know, whatever purposes they need it for. So that's kind of trying to provide something that we always wanted ourselves. We took all of the geocoded Wikipedia articles and put them into our service, and so when you walk around town, you can turn on the Wikipedia layer anywhere in the world and get Wikipedia articles based on your location.
Very interesting. You will have to show me how to do that, to activate that now. Finally, just how could people, I know your Twitter is at Case Organic.
That's correct.
And how would people, how can they reach you or reach GeoLoki information if they want more information?
Sure. You can go to geoloki.com and you can download it for iPhone and Android. And then if you want to talk to me at any time, Twitter is the best way. So Case Organic, and also caseorganic.com. And then I'm also writing a book on cyborg anthropology that hopefully should be out in spring, called Cyborg Anthropology and a Guide to Interface Culture. And it's an illustrated book on things like junk sleep and things.
Thank you very much, Amber. I will leave you now. That's Saturday. I know that you are working. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.